Imagine something with absolutely no overall electrical charge, yet it still manages to create an electric field around itself. Sounds a bit like a magic trick, right?
Yeah, it kind of does.
But it's pure physics, and it's what happens with an electric dipole. Picture two equal but opposite charges. We're talking a positive Q and a negative Q held just a tiny distance 2A apart.
Right.
Our mission in this deep dive, looking at some, you know, fundamental physics principles, is to unravel how these seemingly simple setups generate these fields and, crucially, why understanding this microscopic arrangement has such a macroscopic impact.
It's definitely counterintuitive at first glance. Zero net charge should mean zero electric field, shouldn't it? You'd think so.
Exactly.
But that separation, that distance 2A, that's the key. And the direction we conventionally assign to this dipole, it goes from the negative charge to the positive charge.
Okay. And the center is just the midpoint.
Yep. The midpoint of that separation is the dipole center.
So we're not just talking about some static curiosity here. This deep dive is really designed to give you a real understanding of the electric fields produced by dipoles, whether we're considering them, you know, up close or from way back.
Mm.
And ultimately, we want to connect this back to the fundamental nature of molecules themselves, the tiny building blocks that make up, well, everything around us.
If we frame this as a question, you might ask, how can something with no net charge have such a profound impact on the world around us?
Yeah.
Understanding the dipole is a really crucial step in answering that.
All right, so let's start by focusing on the electric field right along the axis of our dipole. Picture our 2m plus q charges separated by that small distance 2a.
Okay.
Now imagine a point, let's call it P, sitting at a distance from the very center of the dipole. And it's right there on the line, extending through the charges, specifically on the positive charges side.
Got it. So our sources give us the individual electric fields from each charge at this point, P. For the negative charge, the field, E minus Q, let's say, is minus Q over 4 pi epsilon naught times R plus A squared.
Mm-hmm.
P hat.
Okay, wait, unpack that a bit. The R plus A part.
Yeah, that just reflects that point P is further away from the negative charge by that extra distance A. So R plus A.
Makes sense. And the P hat.
Yeah. That little P hat with the arrow, that's just our unit vector pointing along the dipole axis, always from negative to positive charge. Just shows direction.
Okay. And for the positive charge, plus Q at that same spot, P.
Similar idea. The field, E plus Q, is positive Q over 4 pi epsilon naught times RA squared, also times P hat. Here, it's R minus A because P is closer to the positive charge.
Right. Closer by distance A. And that epsilon naught constant you mentioned, permittivity of free space.
Exactly. It's a fundamental constant. It basically tells you how easily an electric field permeates a vacuum.
Okay. So to get the total electric field at P, we just add them up.
Precisely. The principle of superposition lets us just add the vector field. So E, the total field, is E plus Q plus E minus Q.
And when you do the math, it looks like it comes out to EP equals Q over 4 pi epsilon naught times, let's see, 1RA, 1R plus A times P hat.
That's it. And if you combine those fractions, do a bit of algebra, it cleans up to EP equals Q over 4 pi epsilon naught times 4 times P hat.
Okay, that looks a bit involved, maybe. But here's where it gets really interesting, I think.
Yeah.
What happens when we look at this dipole from way, way back? Like when our distance R is much, much larger than that separation A.
Ah, the far field approximation. Yeah, when R is much, much greater than our I, things simplify dramatically. That a squared term in the denominator, the RA, becomes tiny compared to R squared squared or R to the fourth.
So you can basically ignore it.
Pretty much. It becomes negligible. So mm-hmm. The denominator is approximately R to the fourth. And the whole expression simplifies down to E is approximately 1 over 4 pi epsilon naught times 4AR times P at. Which is often written, pulling out a factor of 2, as E equals 1 over 4 pi epsilon naught times 2AQRP hat.
And the really striking thing there is they're R cubed in the denominator.
Exactly. The electric field now drops off with the cube of the distance, 1 over R cubed. That's way faster than the 1 over R squared relationship we see for a single isolated point charge.
That faster drop off has a fascinating consequence, doesn't it? Well, a single charge's influence, you know, stretches out quite far.
Yeah.
The dipole's effect is much more localized.
It is. And that localization turns out to be really important for how molecules interact selectively with each other.
Okay, so that's the axis. Now let's shift perspective. What if we're not on the axis, but out on the equatorial plane?
Right. So imagine that plane slicing right through the dipole center, perpendicular to the line connecting the charges. Let's pick a point on this plane, call it Q, again at a distance or from the center.
Symmetrically placed then.
Exactly. And because of that symmetry, the magnitudes of the electric fields produced by plus Q and minus Q at this point Q are identical. Both are given by E equals 1 over 4 pi epsilon naught times Q divided by R plus A. That denominator comes from the Pythagorean theorem, finding the distance from each charge to Q.
Okay, same magnitude.
Yeah.
But their directions must be different, right? They're not pointing the same way.
Precisely. They point from the charge towards Q or away from Q for the positive charge.
Yeah.
If you break down these electric field vectors into components, you find something neat. The components perpendicular to the dipole axis, they point in opposite directions and they have the same magnitude, so they cancel out perfectly. But the components parallel to the axis, they both point from the positive charge direction towards the negative charge direction, which is opposite to our p-hat vector. Yeah. So they add up.
So the net field is parallel to the axis, but points the other way.
Exactly. The total electric field on the equatorial plane, let's call it EQ, works out to be E equals minus 1 over 4 pi epsilon naught times 2qr plus A32 times p-hat. That minus sign is crucial, showing it's opposite to p-hat.
And again, thinking about that far field view, when air is much bigger than A.
Same simplification happens. When air, that A squared and the R plus A32, becomes negligible compared to R squared. So the denominator becomes approximately R32, which is just R cubed.
Oh, there is again the R cubed.
Yep. The formula simplifies to E as approximately minus 1 over 4 pi epsilon naught times 2 key R times P hat. Or sometimes written focusing on just the cot part as minus 1 over 4 pi epsilon naught times T hat, depending on definitions.
Okay, so on the equatorial plane far away, it also falls off as 1 over R cubed, but it points opposite to the dipole direction.
Correct. The magnitude is actually half of what it was on the axis at the same large distance R.
Interesting. You know, it seems like this product, the charge Q times the separation 2A, keeps popping up. Especially for these large distance formulas, it feels like.
Yeah.
Like that combination itself is fundamental to the dipole.
You've absolutely hit on a key insight there. That leads us directly to defining the dipole moment vector. It's usually denoted by a lowercase p.
Okay.
And it's defined precisely as p equals q times 2a times p hat. So its magnitude is the charge magnitude q times the full separation 2a, and its direction is the direction of p hat from negative to positive charge.
Ah, so it's a single vector that captures both the dipole strength, you know, the Q times 2A part, and its orientation, the P hat direction.
Exactly. It bundles that essential information together. It's a really neat way to encapsulate the dipole's characteristics.
That sounds incredibly useful for simplifying things.
Yeah.
So how does using this dipole moment, P, change our electric field formulas for those large distances?
It makes them much cleaner, much more elegant. For a point on the axis, far away, the electric field E becomes simply 1 over 4 pi epsilon naught times 2PRO. We just replace 2QR with P.
Oh, nice. Okay.
And for a point on the equatorial plane far away, it's E equals minus 1 over 4 pi epsilon naught times PRP. Again, just replacing the 2PR or Ka appropriately.
Wow, that's much more compact. It really highlights that from a distance, the specific Q and 2A don't matter individually, only their product, the dipole moment P.
Precisely. The dipole moment is the dominant factor determining the field far away. The magnitude and direction depend on R, of course, and also on the angle between where you are and the direction of the dipole moment vector. We've only looked at a 0 degrees axis and 90 degrees equator, but it varies smoothly between them.
Right. Now, you briefly mentioned something called a point dipole earlier. What exactly is that? Is it just a really small dipole?
It's more of a theoretical limit. An idealization. We imagine the separation 2A shrinking, getting closer and closer to zero. And at the same time, we imagine the charge Q getting larger and larger, approaching infinity. But, and this is the crucial part, they change in such a specific way that their product, PQ times 2A, remains a finite constant value.
Huh. So it's like we're zooming out so far, or the dipole is so tiny, that the two charges effectively merge into a single point. But the memory of their separation, that dipole moment P, still exists and has a value.
That's a great way to put it. It's an infinitesimal separation with an infinite charge, yielding a finite dipole moment. And for this theoretical point dipole, those simplified formulas we just derived using P.
The ones with 2PRU and NACPRO?
Yes. Those become exact formulas for the electric field at any distance or R, no matter how close or far. They're not just approximations anymore for a true point dipole. It's a useful model in certain theoretical calculations.
Okay, I see. This is all fascinating from a physics perspective, the math and the concepts. But maybe we should ground it a bit. What's the real-world significance? Why should, you know, our listeners care about these tiny separations of charge?
Right. This is where it connects to chemistry and material science, really. At the molecular level, many, many molecules behave like electric dipoles.
Like actual molecules.
Absolutely. No, and some molecules, think carbon dioxide, CO2, or methane, CH4. The way the atoms are arranged means the sort of center of gravity for the positive charge, the nuclei, coincides exactly with the center for the negative charge, the electrons.
So they overlap perfectly.
Effectively, yes.
Yeah.
These molecules have no permanent dipole moment. They're nonpolar. However, if you put them in an external electric field, that field can pull the positive nuclei one way and the negative electron cloud the other way, slightly distorting the molecule. This induces a temporary dipole moment.
So even normally balanced molecules can become dipoles temporarily if there's a field around.
Exactly. They get polarized, but then there are other molecules that have a permanent dipole moment built right in.
Okay, like what?
The classic example is water, H2O. Because of the bent shape of the water molecule and the fact that oxygen pulls electrons more strongly than hydrogen?
Electronegativity, right.
Right, electronegativity differences. The center of the negative charge near the oxygen doesn't coincide with the center of the positive charge between the hydrogens. They're naturally offset.
So water molecules are intrinsically lopsided, electrically speaking.
That's a good way to think of it. They have a permanent electric dipole moment even when there's no external electric field around. We call these polar molecules.
Wow. So water, which is, you know, fundamental to everything, is basically a tiny electric dipole. That really drives the point home.
It really does. And these dipole moments, both permanent and induced, are responsible for a huge range of properties and technologies we see every day.
Like what, for instance?
Well, think about why water is such a good solvent, especially for salts. It's largely because the polar water molecules can surround the positive and negative ions in the salt crystal, interacting with them via these dipole forces. Or think about how materials behave in electric fields. That's the basis for capacitors, insulators, dielectrics. It all comes down to how the molecular dipoles, permanent or induced, respond. Microwave ovens work by making water molecule dipoles rotate rapidly.
Okay, that makes the connection much clearer. Maybe we can make it even more concrete with that numerical example from our source material. Example 1.9, part A.
Sure. So this example sets up two charges, plus 10 microcoulombs and minus 10 microcoulombs. They're separated by 5.0 millimeters. So Q is 10 microcoulombs and 2A is 5 millimeters.
Tiny separation. And the question is to find the electric field at a point P on the axis 15 centimeters away from the center, and it's on the side of the positive charge.
Right. So R equals 15 centimeters, or 0.15 meters. The example first does the exact calculation, finding the field from each charge separately at point P.
Okay.
The positive 10 microcoulomb charge creates a field pointing away from it, calculated as 4.13 times 10 to the 6 newtons per coulomb.
And the negative charge?
The negative 10 microcoulomb charge creates a field pointing towards it, calculated as 3.86 times 10 to the 6 newtons per coulomb.
So they're along the same line, the axis, but pointing in opposite directions.
Exactly. So the net field is just the difference between those two magnitudes.
Which works out to be 2.7 times 10 to the 5 newtons per coulomb. And it points away from the dipole along the direction from negative to positive charge.
Correct. Because the field from the closer positive charge is slightly stronger. Now, what's really neat is when the example applies our approximate formula for a far point on the axis.
The E equals 141.
That's the one. First, they need the dipole moment, P. That's Q times 2A. So 10 by 10 OC times 5 by 10O, which gives 5 times 10 to the minus 8 coulometers.
Okay, that's P.
Then they plug that P and R exhale 0.15 meters into the approximate formula, and the result they get.
Let me guess. Pretty close.
Remarkably close. 2.6 times 10 to the 5 newtons per coulomb, also pointing away from the dipole. Almost identical to the exact calculation.
And the example points out why the approximation works so well here, right? The ratio of the distance R, 15 centimeters, to half the separation A, which is 2.5 millimeters.
Yeah. Ra is 150 millimeters, 2.5 millimeters, which is 60.
60. So R is 60 times larger than A. That definitely counts as much, much greater than.
Absolutely. It really validates using that far field approximation in this kind of scenario. It saves quite a bit of calculation compared to finding both fields and subtracting.
Okay. So that was the axis. Now, part B, the same example, looks at a point Q, also 15 centimeters in the center, so same R. But this time, Q is on that perpendicular line, the equatorial plane.
Right. Again, the example first calculates the field from each charge individually at point Q. Using the geometry, the distance from either charge to Q is the square root of R plus A.
Okay.
The magnitudes of the fields from plus Q and Q turn out to be equal, calculated as 3.999 times 10 to the 6 newtons per coulomb.
But they point in different directions, making that V shape we talked about.
Exactly. And as we discussed, the components perpendicular to the axis cancel out. The components parallel to the axis add up, pointing from the positive side towards the negative side, opposite to the dipole moment vector P.
And the total field there comes out to
1.33 times 10 to the 5 newtons per coulomb, parallel to the axis but pointing opposite to P hat.
And just like before, they then use the approximate formula for the equatorial plane far away, the E equals 141.
Yep. Using the same dipole moment, P equals 5 by 10 USCM and R equals 0.15 meters.
Does it match again?
Perfectly. It gives exactly 1.33 times 10 to the 5 newtons per coulomb, and the formula inherently includes the direction opposite to the dipole moment because of that minus sign.
That's pretty convincing. The approximations really hold up when the distance is large compared to the separation.
They do. It reinforces how useful the dipole moment concept and those simplified 1R formulas are.
So let's try and summarize the big picture here. Even though an electric dipole has zero net charge overall.
Which is still kind of wild to think about.
It is. But that separation of charges, even a tiny one, creates a definite significant electric field around it.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe the key takeaway, the thing that's really different, is how that field behaves far away. It drops off much faster as 1 over r cubed compared to the 1 over r squared field from a single charge.
That's fundamental. And that dipole moment vector, PEI2A2AP, that's our shorthand, our concise way to capture the dipole's essence, its strength, and orientation, especially if we're describing that far field behavior.
Exactly. And understanding these basic electric dipoles isn't just abstract physics. It's absolutely crucial because it forms the foundation for understanding how molecules behave.
Right. Why some molecules are polar, like water, and others are nonpolar, and how they all interact with each other and with electric fields.
So many everyday phenomena, like dissolving things or how capacitors work, really trace back to these permanent or induced dipole moments in molecules.
It's true, which, you know, leads to a potentially interesting thought to leave you, the listener, with. We've been talking about paired opposites, positive and negative electric charge separated slightly, creating this dipole field. Could this idea, this principle of paired opposites generating a field or an effect, have parallels elsewhere in physics?
Like magnetic dipoles. Or maybe even something else entirely.
Perhaps. Are there other kinds of dipole-like phenomena out there involving different fundamental quantities? It's something to ponder.
That is a fascinating question. And if this deep dive into electric dipoles has sparked your interest, I definitely encourage you to look further.
Yeah, you could explore what happens when you put these dipoles in external electric fields. They experience torques, forces.
Or how the collective behavior of, like, billions and billions of these tiny dipoles gives materials their overall electrical properties, their dielectric constants, and things like that.
Absolutely. There's a whole rich landscape of electromagnetism waiting for you, built on these fundamental ideas.